I'm thinking of, titling Sunday talks. Maybe people like that have a title or something, you know. I was inspired by Elizabeth Wadsworth title. I like that, from Booze to Bodhicitta. So, so my talk tonight, I have kind of title. Are Buddhists afraid of love? At home, I get some of the Dharma magazines, like Lion's Roar. Took our name, the Lion's Roar, and Tricycle, and maybe sometimes there's a few others, Dharma something. So maybe there have been articles about love, but I have to look them up. Maybe a scholar in here. But generally, American Buddhists they're talking about loving kindness. Like, you can't just say love sometimes. It always has to be loving kindness or compassion or kindness. However, in our tradition, you know, we just come out and talk about love. And we talk about romantic love, too. not just non-romantic or filial love. usually that's not a lot of text on that, right? They're tantric kind of things, but those seem to be exercises. so where is it that we talk about love in maybe traditional tantra? Talked about love in guru yoga and in dakini practice. These are aspects that are generally introduced after people have taken some highest yoga tantra empowerments, or at least some kind of practice that initiates and uses the power of love. Guru yoga and, of course, dakini practice, yidam practice is in that category. So in advanced highest yoga tantra, which includes the high tantras and the Dzogchen tantras and the Mahamudra teachings, the idea is that we're falling in love with each other and we're falling in love with the world. It doesn't mean we just like people or we are kind to them or compassionate in Vajrayana tradition. We have all those feelings that usually in the West or in Asia are just reserved for, romance or something like that. So we use that energy in our practice. We not just use it to go somewhere else. We express it as highest expression. So if you're still with me, I want to talk about how, you know, what really does all the practice lead to? Why are we doing all this? And it does lead to a wisdom love. We all know about attached love. We all know about problems, being in love, being married, being not married, loving, losing. In Tantra, we talk about wisdom love. So when we're saying, you know, blissful wisdom, it's not just the bliss of seeing or the bliss of liberation or the bliss of insight or the bliss of understanding. It's the whole emotional side of loving. So we have this wisdom love, which is our highest, like that. Are you cold?
Yeah, is that all right?
Yeah, well, okay. Is everyone cold?
Yeah.
Some are cold, some are hot. Yeah, like that. We need two two sanghas there, like a little bit. Those that are cold could put on jackets, though, too, you know, sometimes. Yeah. You know, I'm reminded of the I don't know, it's a Buddhist story or just Hindu story about the king that, or the prince that walked out of his palace after a while, and he was used to walking around the palace in bare feet, and then he went out and cut his, you know, went out on the street or went out just walking around his kingdom and cut his feet on the ground. So he ordered his prime minister to kill all the cows and bulls and put leather on the ground, right? And like that. And the prime minister, in this case being wise, maybe this was the Buddha in a past life or something, said, "Oh, why don't we try something else, Your Highness?" And fashioned the first pair of shoes and then walked around. That's why it's nice to have sometimes a zen, you know, like you wear a zen or a sweater, and then if you're a little cold, you put that on, then you're hot, you take it off. And you find that happens a lot in Asia, where, you know, when you're sitting outside or even temperatures in India can vary quite a bit, actually, you know. So you know, people are kind of always suggesting, like, this is, when the Zen is like this, then it's a little bit more formal when it's like this, you know. But then sometimes if, you know, you're cold or your meditation, then, you know, sometimes you're like this.
And I'm going to go outside and get my jacket.
And then sometimes, you know, sometimes actually, you know, people are sitting like this, you know, in meditation, something like that. So, like that, you know, because, of course, most monasteries in India, they don't have AC, but it can get cold, you know. It's even southern India, where Sera monasteries are, and Pema Norbu Rinpoche is Mindraling, you know, which has this huge Rinpoche, incredible statue. So, it gets cold in the morning, you know, the wind's coming through at night, so you see people with, you know, different robes doing different things. So it's very practical. These zens are very practical. This is a summer one. It's nice and light, like that. So, I like saying wisdom love because we have developed the whole cognitive side of our practice, starting with, you know, just basic concentration, using just, you know, regular, almost just regular mind, Tibetan Sem, S-E-M, like just regular dualistic mind, and then, you know, progressing to, you know, superior seeing, that's general translation for La Tong. The Theravada Vipassana community says Vipassana maybe. We mean something different from our Vipassana, actually. It has a more, a little different feel. And then after that comes Sherab or Prajna. So we have all these different terms and styles of knowing. Finally, we have like awareness or you know, like seeing awareness, which is Rigpa. Rigpa is a kind of translation for vidya. You know, a seer, an awareness holder. Trungpa Rinpoche had nice term vijadra, awareness holder. In our tradition, in the highest yoga tantra tradition, we also, when I say our tradition, Buddhist tradition, we also use the term jhana, and we translate that as yeshe, which is a higher, more tantric, refined style of prajna, which generally is translated as discriminating awareness or appreciative, or as Herbert Gunther said, appreciative discriminating awareness, something like that, pra and jna, so like that. So people taking refuge here have first lineage name of yeshe, or in Sanskrit, jhana. So all these cognitive sides of knowing, seeing nature of reality, nature of mind, line up, right? But what about the emotional side? Okay, this sometimes we forget about that, you know, or you know we stop at kindness and compassion, but generally kindness and compassion are linked to insight or vipassana, and then prajna is linked to like the sense of you know, purity, seeing emptiness of things. This is an emotional. This is an emotional configuration to emptiness, because emptiness is interconnected, right? When we feel connected to something, you know, we feel emotional. There's an emotion, right? So I want to counter just thing like somehow you just see emptiness and you go, oh well, yeah. No, there's emotional that you there's this. They're just seeing is one thing, but you know, there's like first when you see maybe someone getting off the plane, you're meeting somebody at the airport and you haven't seen them for a couple of years, or your teacher's getting off, this first recognition, right? But then there's a huge heart opening, right? Or something like that, right? So there's always going to be an energy, emotional component to you know, insight into emptiness. Then, you know, Rigpa awareness has the emotional tone of presence. Then now, you know, just, isn't it nice when you feel someone's just like present for you? You know, they're just really there. You know, you just really feel like, God, they're really there for me. They're really just there. There's also a stage in our practice that's you know, recognition of we talk about this a lot in Mahamudra, the complete unbounded nature of mind. Complete, like no end mind, the complete, there's a recognition of not just the emptiness aspect or the purity aspect or the clarity aspect, but the complete, you know, vastness aspect. Like when we were kids, I used to ask my parents, like, how big is the universe? and then you'd say, well, what's at the end of the universe? Is there like a wall or brick wall, or what's beyond that? You know, that kind of thing. So we're experimenting with the complete idea of complete liberation, complete unlimited nature of awareness. There's an insight into that, and the correlate of that is real happiness, real unconditional happiness. So this emotional side to liberation. Oh, yeah, you know, if we've been liberated from something, you know, or we we thought we had to do something we don't, or we've been let out of something. Don't you feel this immense kind of just burst of happiness? I mean, this kind of joy, happiness, this like complete like, wee! This is like, there's a real release, right? So liberation of mind, you know, of any, you know, final clinging to some kind of, it's not really separate from awareness or, but there's sometimes a subtle clinging to like awareness. And then you realize there's a state in practice where you don't really have to keep maintaining your awareness. And like, it's very subtle, but then there's a kind of breakthrough, like, wow, this, we're really, really free. You know, we don't talk about that enough in Western Dharma either, except in real Tantra, because teachers, even in Asia, are a little cautious. You know, if you say, you're really free, then there's the presumption that you'll go out and do bad stuff. and also in America, maybe there's a little bit of, kind of Puritanism too, or maybe we'll be afraid we'll end up like Rajneesh or something, or, you know, I don't know, you know, something like, that's too free, don't do that, you know. But that freedom has an incredible joy and happiness released in, with it, you know. But when all those are put together, and you understand how the whole thing really works, and you finally reach, sometimes we call it like the real kind of ground of being, then the wisdom mind, there's a sense of it all coming together. You know, you just, there's a sense of complete totality, right, in the wisdom mind. Where it's not like any of these are missing that sense of totality, but there's a really, I like sometimes the word totality instead of just completeness, you know. Completeness is, you think, well, incomplete, but totality, like there's nothing outside of totality. Okay, so that the wisdom mind that sometimes we call Yeshe has... Is not extra mind, but a complete totalistic experience. And there's nothing outside of it, you know. It's nothing like thinking, there's nothing like, is there something else? That's not even thinking, this is it. You don't even need to think, this is it, or is there something else? Complete experience of totality. And what would be the emotional expression or the emotional energy of complete totality? I already told you, but just in case, what would be the complete emotional energy of totality? Love. Complete energy of love goes with a complete experience of totality, which is the wisdom mind, you know, which puts together the liberation, the awareness, the discriminating wisdom, the insight, you know, just in the concentration states. It all, you just see how it all just, there's nothing outside of it. So that's why, you know, it used to drive me apeshit, but my teacher would say, like, everything's the truth. And I go, no, not everything's the truth. Look at how fucked up things are. You know, and you go, everything's the truth. This is an expression of totality. You just can't, there's nowhere you can go. You're not even seeing any... Even the delusion has its own truth. There's a complete experience of totality. Nothing's left out. So that's really, really full love. Like no one's left out, right? You're not kind of going, well, these people are lovable. That isn't, you know. So at that point, it's very, very emotional. And it's not just this kind of, it's not just loving kindness. We start there with kind of, developing our concentration based on vijnana or some, you know, dualistic mind, and then we gradually refine until when we get to the level of, we say level, but Dzogchen's not really a level, it's just like, oh, it's always been here and nothing's left out. But that kind of recognition has an incredible loving, the loving energy and the recognition of totality go together at the same time. That's easy, right? Can't be any other. You know, you just have this complete certainty. Wow, that's can't be anything else. There's nothing left out. You know, there's no one left out. That's nice. So, maybe I'll write a letter to one of the editors at Tricycle. I know one of the editors from my old Naropa days, and say, you know, do you guys ever talk about, like, you know, just really love? You know, I don't know. Let's have a little discussion. I don't know a lot of articles or just teachings on, you know, just really being in love with people. Do you run into that? Maybe Susan does. She's...
It's about a Pentecostal teacher who Oral Roberts called his black son. Up there in the church. But he, at some point or another, saw some TV things on Africa and people, which was devastating, starving. And he ended up being accused of heresy and kicked out of this huge black ministry as a heretic. He now is a Unitarian. And travels. But he made this switch based on what?
What's it called again?
Sunday.
Right. That's nice, yeah.
It's just really, really interesting.
Whole
guy's life just fell apart, and then we
built it. Well, teacher wanted to build a huge statue of Maitreya. I think Lama Zopa's been trying to build that statue in India. I don't know where that is. And, you know, kind of at this point, you know, maybe it's scaled down a little bit, you know.
But,
yeah, maybe, you know, I don't know. I don't know where that project is, you know. Yeah, some there are, you know, getting the land and I don't know where they are, but with the project. But, you know, being kind of intellectual at that time, you know, I was saying to Geshe-la, like, well, you know, Maitreya, you know, like, really, you know, shouldn't we have something, you know, like Dorje Drakpo? I mean, shouldn't we have something really tough? That's what America needs now. No. The whole thing is loving Buddha, you know, Maitreya Buddha, and that's the whole thing, you know, right? So he was ahead of the game in that. But usually when people talk about their teachers in our tradition, they, you know, for an outer audience, you're just talking to outer audience, they will talk about the teacher's scholarship or, their activities, their Dharma activities, you know, with teachings and empowerments. But what, you know, just a little question for you guys. So what, when people, close students, are talking about themselves, about their teacher, or definitely their past teacher or something, what are they talking about? What qualities of the teacher do they most emphasize? Who wants to take?
The heart connection.
Yeah, that's it. It's the love connection. No one's talking about, like, no one was saying, like, oh, yeah, Geshe Gyatso, he's a really smart guy. I learned a lot from him. No, you know, heart students just say, yeah, it's just loving, you know, it's not, there's no, you don't have to talk about realization at that point. There's nothing, it's completely omniscient. There's totality. You're not going, yeah, he's really smart, no shit. No, no, it's all completely heart-centered, isn't it? Yeah.
You know, for 25 years I've meditated on two things. One of them is compassion without bias. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's, you know,
I mean, they're
translated, but. They said, yeah, it is just come right out and say it. Yeah, it's love, you know, because somehow devotion sounds a little bit kind of a little bit too culty or worshipy. It's just a heart open, you know, it's complete loving heart opening, you know, with a sense of wanting to fulfill someone's wishes, you know, like that, and then. You know, so there's lots of, you know, terms now it's a little hard to get away from that are translations for certain things. But yeah, that's just it, you know.
Compassion
just,
without bias. I mean, yeah. What
is that? Yeah, it's just no unconditional love, yeah, you know, yeah. So, but, you know, different, just like there's so many different words in Sanskrit and Tibetan for cognitive activities, you know, I thought it'd just be a little scholarly and go over these main ones, but There's probably a couple hundred Sanskrit words for that the Tibetans also transcribed, maybe 300. You know, that, you know, are cognitive activities, but there's also like 300 for all these, you know, emotional kind of things like that. But it just, it's best in English, really. You know, when we just say no, just, you know, just when, like, we say, you know, I love my kids, I love my partner, I love, you know, love the 49ers, you know, I mean, it's just, we should just use the right, you know, just really use the word, even though, of course, it has, you know, also, you know, maybe people can point out, well, love has attachment, or, you know, or love gets you in trouble, or, you know, so, but in Tantra, we're not afraid to use those words, or afraid to say, yes, you know, we do that, you know. So we're going to redefine the word, right? We're not going to say, well, we can't say love because someone might take that wrong. So we're going to say kindness, you know? We're going to use it, you know? We're going to use that energy. I'm just curious. I don't want to be thinking like, I guess you can do a literature search online and, you know, yes. You just had to, did you find one? Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Well, Thich Nhat Hanh talks about love quite a bit.
He does talk about love, yeah. He does, yeah.
And quite a bit of detail. He has a CD called Love or On Love or something. It's about intimate relationships.
Yeah. Yeah, true love.
Yeah.
True love coffee house.
I don't know about that.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, it is a good example. Thank you. You know, and of course, and, you know, Dalai Lama too, you know, you know, that's a good example. I know he shocked some of his students, maybe 10, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, he kind of wrote a poem about like someone he was in love with and kind of blew the crowd out of the water for a little while, like that, yeah. Took some guts. Yeah. You found something, yeah. Reggie, yeah.
The Mahayana journey is the expressive
love,
power, and freedom. And it talks about, so what, the other articles you talked about, which you haven't talked about, but
this
right here, he's talking about
the
other unique sense of joy that is possible in nothing in our experience,
yeah.
Push aside.
Yeah. That's a little different. Yeah, I know that article by Reggie. Yeah,
yeah, so then?
A little different. Well, to go into a little bit more depth, when you know this, this experience of you know love totality. I think when Thich Nhat Hanh was maybe doing his poetry closest to that, you know. From the very beginning, I've always been kind of a nosy therapist type, right? So, you know, I've never been one, you know, just, I don't ask teachers, like, well, what's your experience of emptiness, you know? Have you ever been in love like that, you know? So you get more interesting answers that way. And I've known a lot of teachers very closely, so I haven't met any teacher that's actually said no that really has some realization. And I don't mean just kind of agape love of, you know, I'm really loving, but no, like in love, you know, like that. So in our tradition, we have both the eros and agape, you know, to use those kind of Greek terms, the erotic love and the self-giving kind of more maybe platonic love. Those come together, you know, particularly when we're considering, you know, dakini practice or, you know, blissful practice with consort. So that we are talking about romantic love and the ups and downs of love too, right? You know, so probably Trungpa Rinpoche, well, the person I knew the best, you know, that you know would write about his love affairs and like kind of things going great and then going poorly and things going great and then going poorly and marriage going great and then going poorly, kids going great and then going poorly and then great, you know. So that part is still very much an oral tradition and kind of hidden language a little bit, you know. Teachers fall in love and do things too, right? Buddhas fall in love and do things too, right? You know. So when we're talking about love here, we're talking about the wisdom love that combines the, you know, all the aspects of love too, right? The giving unconditional love, kind of motherly love, but also the erotic style and romantic style with all the joys and sorrows that go with that too. Interesting. Yes.
So I have this most curiosity about this, and I sense this equality in you and in other teachers. I've been this totally open, blissful love. But I wonder, you know, within sanghas, have you experienced that the sanghas generally have a high level of this? Because I know this is Sacramento, so this is all I know. Does the sangha get to that level of experience?
Actually, it may be happening here in Sacramento right under your very eyes, you know?
That's why I was kind of to ask, because I think it's just my bias about who I am.
Yeah.
The whole thing, and I think, you know, even with me, I'm hopeful that I have little glimpses.
Yeah. Well, love isn't always blissful in that conventional way, of course. So that's why I'm saying wisdom, love. But loving is blissful, even, sanghas, you know, tantric sanghas really do have that feel where, there's that, real love energy is operating, yeah. When it goes haywire, people have, misused sexuality or misused power, and there's a weird quality to it. But when it's balanced, it's incredibly close and loving, and people, in big sanghas, people have that energy for each other. So, this is a pretty good sangha, actually, because we're doing close retreats together, I like to keep track of people. This is very classic. We're really running it very classically. We're not quite running it as a monastery, we're running it as like a gar, like an encampment, around a teacher, more than just, we're not running so much just a shedra or a college, we're running it very much like, a bigger camp out, kind of, so to speak, right? So, people get to know each other really well. And, like an indicator is you just kind of like, I just can't see myself practicing or doing it without that person. Like, we need that person, Love has to do with preservation too, and we need that person to kind of, do what I need to do in my life, not just like they're coming or going, So there's this really strong connection. So I don't know, it's as strong as connection as, your kids, right? Like that. Right, and strong connection is, someone you're incredibly in love with, and strong connection is loving the earth or your pets or stuff like that. All that energy goes into the practice.
And then as you keep practicing that together, individually that will grow, I imagine.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. And, that's frankly, that's why these incredible teachers love coming here. Because they're picking up on that, right? Who doesn't want to be around that, Who doesn't want to be around, It's not just like we're smart or, we've got the rituals down or they like the tonkas. I mean, or they're interested, of course, spreading Dharma, but also teachers like myself. I like going to nice places that, feel supportive, right? I like going like, there's a lot of energy here. There's a lot of love here, like, picking up on that, it's just like pure energy, right? Yeah, so that's it.
When I first came here, I didn't need to teach her for a while, and I didn't care. I didn't. I was happy with the people.
Yeah, that's a real nice testament, thank you. So, that's very doable. We're doing it in Sacramento because, we're not so much interested in being famous, not so much interested in being, powerful, like we're just interested in being, Dharma lovers, right? That's the main idea. It's the big deal. This looks like you're buying something at an auction or something. So.
Everybody has
Yeah, definitely trust is a big part, you know, feeling safe, trust is all part of, you know, true love, absolutely. Yeah, and yeah, we go on that. So here we don't start with belief or behavior, we actually start with, view.
Right.
Yeah, and view is like wisdom love, you know, view isn't just like a, you know, view is... There's no great translation for any of the Dharma terms, you know, but yeah, the view always has the insight and the emotion going together. I mean, you can't just like, you know, see, I don't know, an incredible view without also having incredibly, you know, like even just a geographical view without also having like a heart opening. You can't see someone that you haven't seen for a while or, you know, someone in the hospital, you know, and then... You're going to see, and the emotion is going to be simultaneous, right? It's co-emergent. So that will definitely go together. Yeah. So I'll Subin and I will be going to France on Thursday, and poking around different places. Hopefully combination of high French, whatever it is, Enlightenment buildings like the Louvre and, Versailles. We'll go, I want to explore some of the cathedrals like Chartres, and we'll also be poking into some Dharma centers and incognito to see if they greet strangers nicely, right? That's always it, you know. You like, I'm always thinking, what, you know, how does the first comer feel like walking in? I think that people here do, I know they say they feel welcome, you know. It's a very welcoming group, so I like that. So I'd like to think of people continuing doing the practice while I'm gone, of course, and doing Sagadawa. So I'm going to take off now in the middle. While you can take a little break, but then come back and do a little meditation while I'm physically gone. But then you actually imagine, feel the guru yogas, you feel the teacher's presence, you know, even when the tulku, the material form, is gone, right? That's a true, real experience. It's not just a, you know, not just a fabrication like that. That makes sense, right? So leaving in the middle, then I have to come back. Right, that makes sense, right? You leave, teacher leaves in the middle, they have to come back to finish. Right? So you don't... That's why one time, you know, after my teacher got up, you know, the Tibetan style is you just kind of drop your robe, and I folded a little bit, and he said, no, don't do that, I won't come back. So it's a little different than Japanese style. So I think in Zen style, it's been a while, but I don't know, they kind of bow even on the way out. Yeah. So we don't bow on the way out because we pledge to come back. Right? So you leave it open. So people are wondering, like, why didn't this teacher finish up the projects? When he was gone, he leaves, you know, people were saying that even about Kala Rinpoche, you know, or the Karmapa and Dujin Rinpoche. Well, because the teacher's coming back, right? So we have Kala Rinpoche Yangtze and Dujin Rinpoche Yangtze and like that. So you want to leave it kind of open. That makes sense, right? So you guys stretch a little bit and then Derek, why don't you do like, you know, just short meditation with the teacher. Yeah, like that, and that's fine. Good. So I'll see some of you maybe, actually, if you want to, like I think tomorrow I'm getting over here at noon to say hello to Geshe-la and Tenzin Chokis, right? So I suggested it might be good to do a dry run, kind of, you know, like, for the Sagadawa to see like how the seating goes and stuff like that, because Geshe-la hasn't met Venerable Tenzin Chokyi yet, right? So it's kind of traditional for the teacher, the head lama, to be present while these things happen. So I'm gonna scamper over here and be here by noon. But if someone else isn't working and they want to come over and say hello, that's fine too, right? That makes sense. Who's here for the first time? Anybody? No, no one's here. Oh, hi. Yeah, you're a student of Thich Nhat Hanh's, maybe? Kind of? Of a few people, yeah. Oh, you're from Chagyut Gompa. Oh, that's good, yeah. So I have a few Chagyut Rinpoche stories like that. So maybe, yeah, he... came and visited Lion's Roar a bunch of times in the late 80s, early 90s, like that. So he was one of those teachers you could talk to, like, his English wasn't really good, but he'd be better when it slowed down, you know? So he was nosy, you know? So he and of course, now, like, you know, Chagyut Khandro, you know, Jane, let's talk about your relationship. So they're a very nice couple, you know. Interesting, you know. What's it really like to be in love? And this is, and you don't want to get together with teachers and oh, what's emptiness and what's the nature of mind? You know, you always want to talk about, you know, what's really going on, right? Yeah, he's a really lovely teacher and took a number of different empowerments with him. Yeah. Nice. Oh, and gave me shit one time. You know, like, okay, you're late. You know, it's like going to an empowerment in the Bay Area. Did you ever get stuck in traffic? I've gotten, you know, stuck in traffic on the way to an empowerment. So, like, he's a wonderful teacher, you know. So, usually, somebody shows up late, you just ignore them, right? You know, a whole bunch of people in the room, someone shows up late. You know, like, Rinpoche would go, you're late. You probably never met him in person, maybe. Yeah. No, he'd go, you're late. Yeah, what's up with that? You know, like, and I was not expecting that. You know, and then everyone turns around, the whole freaking thing stopped. You're late. You know, that was embarrassing. But teachers would do that. You know, yeah. So, Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So. Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Yeah. These days, you know, just a little bit, you need to know, it's like even the Tibetan and Mongolian lamas coming over are become much more international and Americanized, right? So they kind of know what will play in America and what won't. You know, and Chadgyur Rinpoche, of course, Trungpa Rinpoche, my old teacher, really Tibetan, like, they'd call you out in the middle of stuff. You know, humiliating someone, embarrassing them in public is something that's the worst thing in Asia, right? So if you screwed up, lots of times, you know, people don't like that here in America. They say, well, I'm, you know, but that would happen a lot in the monastery and in close contact. You would just, you know, like that. You know, it doesn't even feel, it's not, you know, it's not even wrathful. It's just kind of like, I wouldn't call it wrathful. I would call it kind of just, you know, kind of. Yeah. You might feel wrathful. Yeah. It's kind of. It's not a. Yeah. It's kind of. It's just kind of. But the point is kind of like really shaming. See, so sometimes wrathful, like, you know, just you think someone's just a little angry and okay, that's right. No, it's like. Gets under your skin, okay? You know, the teachers will get under your skin. Maybe you haven't had that experience, like really get under your skin and, yeah. 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 That's an initial beginning level, okay, where you feel like it's a clean, right? No, the like the purpose, like you're opened up and the hook's in you. Yeah, the hook, you're hooked.
Yeah. He says, short. Make it short.
Yeah, like that. Yeah, like that. Yeah. That's all. There's one. The slicing where you feel a sense of kind of like, oh, great, thank you. And then there's also, you know, the wrathful. There's also like you're getting a fish hook into your heart, like that. And that's not always pleasant, but it does work. Yeah, thanks. That was nice.
You'll be listening to like a few minutes of meditation. Yeah, thank you so much.
See you, Shalom.